Santan rode with a slack rein, letting her mount choose its own pace and path. She had Shasa on her hip with a sling under him to support his weight. She held his head in the crook of her arm, and he slept quietly against her. The wind had scourged the desert for 5 days now without cease, and the driven sands hissed and slithered across the earth's surface like sea spume across a beach. And the round seed pods of tumbleweed trundled across the plain like footballs. The small herds of springbok turned their backs to its chilling blast and tucked their tails up between their legs. Santan had wound a scarf around her head like a turban and thrown a blanket over her shoulders to cover Shasa and herself. She hunched down in the saddle, and the cold wind tugged at the corners of the blanket and tangled her horse's long mane. She slitted her eyes against the gritty wind and saw the finger of God. It was still far ahead, indistinct through the dun, dust-laden air, but it spiked the low sky, even in this haze visible from 5 miles off. This was the reason that Lothar Delarey had chosen it. It was unique. There could be no confusion with any other natural feature. Santan pulled up the pony's head and urged him into a trot. Shasa whimpered a protest in his sleep at the change of gait, but Santan straightened in the saddle, trying to throw off the sorrow and rage that lay upon her with a weight that threatened to crush her soul. Slowly, the silhouette of the finger of God hardened against the dusty yellow sky, a slim pillar of rock thrusting towards the heavens, and then thickening into a flaring cobra's head 200 feet above the plain. Staring at it, Santan was aware of the same superstitious awe that must have gripped the old Hottentots who named it Mukorob. Then, from the base of the great stone monument, a dart of light reflected off metal, pricked her eyes, and she shaded them with a blanket and peered intently.
"Shasa," she whispered. "They are there. They are waiting for us."
She urged the weary pony into a canter and rose in the stirrups. In the shadow of the stone pillar was parked a motor vehicle, and beside it a small green cottage tent had been erected. There was a campfire burning in front of the tent, and a plume of smoke blue as a heron's feather, smeared by the wind across the plain. Santan whipped the turban from her head and waved it like a banner.
"Here!" she screamed. "Hello! Here I am!"
The two indistinct human figures rose from beside the fire, staring towards her. She waved and halloed, still at full gallop, and one of the figures broke into a run. It was a woman, a big woman, in long skirts. She held them up over her knees, ploughing with desperate haste through the soft footing. Her face was bright scarlet with effort and emotion.
"Anna!" Santan screamed. "Oh, Anna!"
There were tears streaming down that broad red face, and Anna dropped her skirts and stood with her arms spread wide.
"My baby!"
she cried, and Santan flung herself from the saddle, and clutching Shasa to her breast, ran into her embrace. They were both weeping, holding hard to each other, trying to talk at once but incoherently, laughing between the sobs, when Shasa, crushed between them, let out a protesting howl. Anna snatched him from her and hugged him.
"A boy! He's a boy!"
"Michel," Santan sobbed happily. "I named him Michel Shasa."
And Shasa let out a hoot and grabbed with both hands at that marvellous face, so big and red as a fruit ripe for eating.
"Michel," Anna wept as she kissed him.
Shasa, who knew all about kissing, opened his mouth wide and smeared warm saliva down her chin. Still carrying Shasa, Anna dragged Santan by one arm towards the tent and the campfire. A tall, round-shouldered figure came towards them diffidently. His thinning sandy grey hair was swept back from high scholarly forehead, and his mild, vaguely myopic eyes were a muddier shade of the Courtney blue than Michael's had been. His nose, while every bit as large as General Sean Courtney's, seemed somehow to be ashamed of the fact.
"I am Michael's father," he said shyly,
and it was like looking at a faded and smudged photograph of her, Michael. Santan felt a rush of guilt, for she had been false to her vows and to Michael's memory. It was as though Michael confronted her now. For an instant she remembered his twisted body in the cockpit of the burning aircraft, and in grief and guilt she ran to Gary and threw her arms around his neck.
"Papa,"
she said. And at that word Gary's reserve collapsed, and he choked and clung to her.
"I'd given up hope."
Gary could not go on, and the sight of his tears set Anna off again, which was too much for Shasa. He let out a doleful wail, and all four of them stood together beneath the finger of God and wept.